This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Champions League and, of course, the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Manchester City go top of the table with a 3-1 win over Arsenal at the Emirates. What does that mean for the title race? Plus, Spurs fall to Italian champions AC Milan 1-0 in the Champions League round of 16. Borussia Dortmund go 1-0 up over Chelsea in Germany. Bayern take a 1-0 lead over PSG in their first leg. And talks between Southampton and Jesse Marsh have reportedly broke down. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
Hello, mate.
Should okay, Robbie.
Just got out of studio. The biggest game of the season, I think. The headlines were Arsenal 1, Manchester City 3. City move into first place on goal difference. Arsenal got that game in hand. Big picture. Let's go on a big picture, mate, from the game. What have we learned about both these teams? What did you take away from the result and the performances?
Well, lots. I mean, there's lots to get into, mate. I mean, if we start, I guess, with the end before we get into the details. Yeah. Takeaway was a couple of things, really. First off, Arsenal can't make two, maybe three really big errors and expect to get away with it from when you play against Man City. I thought the front players of Man City showed that they're champions. They made a difference in with the final ball, the final finish, you know, the finish from De Bruyne, you know, other bits of play from De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva helping out scoring goals. Jack Grealish takes his opportunity really well. So the big time players showed up for City when they needed them and when they got the opportunity through terrible mistakes, really trying to play out from the back for Arsenal. And Arsenal's front three didn't really have a major impact in the game, Rob. That being said, first half was pretty even. Yeah. And my notes kind of thought, you know what? Arsenal looked a little better in the first half. Adjustments by Pep, Akanji coming on, playing centre back, Nathan Ake going to left back. That was a weird matchup. Yeah. Saka versus Bernardo Silva in the first half, which looked like, wow, this is going to be good for Arsenal. But I just, back to the big picture. I mean, it's easy to say the you know, the champions played like champions, but you gift them, Rob, those giveaways. Yeah. And by the way, we'll get into the details, but Tomiyasu at right fullback, that's a mistake, wasn't it, from Arteta? That was a mistake. Before that awful error for the goal, De Bruyne goal, his passing was off. He gave it away nearly every time he got it. So it's like, he looked nervous. Big game for him, a big call by Mikel Arteta, leaving Ben White on the bench, brings Ben White on in the 86th minute, I think. So there's lots of little details, I think, that led to it. But bigger picture, of course, City now are fighting, fired up from those allegations from the Premier League. They're right back at it. I'm sure many people will have them favourites to go on and win it from now on. I still think there's a long way to go. But no, Man City showed up, mate, in that final third where Arsenal didn't.
Yeah, and I got the sense, you know, in terms of football, Rob, and times that their build-up, their possession. I believe they had something like 60-odd% possession of the ball. I think Pep had 36%, some number around there that our stats people were telling us, which is the lowest he's had as a manager. That, you know, Arsenal, I thought at times, were quite progressive. I thought that, you know, that their football was decent, certainly in the first half. And they created chances, Rob. They created, you know, Nketiah has a great header before anybody scored in the game. Mm. They get down the sides once or twice and get balls across the box. They don't finish. There was another Nketiah shot that got blocked quite early on. And as you say, you're talking about difference in both penalty box had such a difference. Whereas at the other end of the pitch, as you've just rightly said, when City got their chances, I don't know if that's what the champions do, that the title does, knowing what you've got to do in those situations, but they put the finish on it in a way. I just thought that there was a spell around 70-ish minutes on the clock, Rob, where I felt a tension about Arsenal, which was Gabriel was making a few bad mistakes. Zinchenko was making some poor decisions.
Yeah,
they were almost giving themselves problems, and I just wondered, Rob, is that the thing that we didn't know? Is that the thing we had to find out about Arsenal? Like in that nitty gritty, when the game's going to be in the balance, when it's, you know, we know how City are going to react. Liverpool have shown, can testify to the last 5 years. They'll keep going. They'll keep going all the way through. I just felt that it was something switched a bit in Arsenal. Something. I don't know if it was maybe fear of losing the game or I don't know, fear of winning in some respect. Just felt their mentality changed in that period, and then City took that on, smelt it, and went on and got the win.
Are you talking about, Rob, where, you know, it's almost programmed in with Arsenal now defensively that they play out?
Yeah.
They play out, and they're brilliant at it, and for the vast majority of time, it works great, and there's not any issues. Man City are very good pressers when they're at their best. We know that. I'm sure they can almost read the style from Mikel Arteta, from his time know that it's a very similar approach. I just thought that period you're talking about, you're right. I mean, there's a couple of times, obviously, for Gabriel for the goal. Zinchenko, I think, just before that, tried a backheel, they got away with that. Mm. Is that the bit that you guys and Lee and Graham at Pitchside talked about, the experience? And sometimes... Sometimes you just got to go a little bit longer. Now, I know that a philosophy is a philosophy, but I think Mikel Arteta talked about it in his interview, Rob, that sometimes you've got to adjust to the situation and play a little safer. Because that's what, I mean, three goals were from just basic errors of trying to keep it. Yeah, just trying to keep it. I mean, if Tommy Asu's not sure, turn to the right side and try and hook up the line or knock it out of play. Yeah. Same thing with Gabriel. Like, it's just forcing the philosophy, which has been brilliant for them. So it's hard to criticise too much. That's what the manager wants in general. But a game like that, with what was at stake, God, they didn't have to give... I mean, you've got to give credit for City for pushing and for pressing and for pouncing on those errors that they did so efficiently. But that's the frustrating thing for Arsenal, I'm sure the manager and the players and the fans, that, God, they were close. They were right at it first half. But you give them a sniff, City, and as we saw, they'll finish you off.
And I think, Rob, you know, I mean, you make a good point there, and I was trying to sort of get across to Bex as well, is that it shouldn't be doom and gloom, because, you know what, for periods, they play better football than City, and for periods, you know, and if you can say... we've learned something from this. We take this on. We understand a little bit more when those moments come. This ain't over yet. This shouldn't be over. And this is part of their learning, development. We've said about this young squad and a new manager. It's all new too. I just thought that they should in no way like brush over the errors, because it's important that you recognise bad decisions at bad times in the game. But I also think there was a lot to take from the game, Rob. They went toe-to-toe with the best team, one of the best teams we've seen in English football, and at times had more control and passed the ball better. I'm talking more in the first half, but they played out of some good situations in the first half and didn't really have a finishing touch to some of it.
Well, could have been different. And I agree, Rob, and that's why, you know, my opening thought was them front three players, Rob, when there was good opportunities, good situations, that final ball, and Nketiah's headed opportunities. Now, I know, like, this front line cost, like, $7 million, or three of them. They're super young. There's a big, bright future ahead of them. But I guess this is, you know, this is the Premier League, and this is going for the title of the Premier League against Manchester City, a formidable side that have been brilliant for seasons after seasons. To get past them and to finish... as champions, I guess those young players have got to step up and perform immediately. And just today, you know, Martinelli was quiet. Yeah. I mean, Saka had moments. Yeah. Nketiah didn't quite. You know, you compare that with those, you know, De Bruyne and Grealish's goal, and Haaland touch and finishes takes his one. And And Bernardo Silva's, I think, through ball for I'm not sure which goal it was, the Grealish goal. The cleverness, Grealish. Rob. The Grealish goal is a great example, isn't it? Bernardo Silva just quickly, was it him that turns and... Oh, it was Gundogan. Gundogan's quick turn, lays it over for...
Kevin De Bruyne.
Just that little bit of quality. Yeah, that little bit of quality was the difference. But as you said, I've got the Arsenal games coming up, Rob, here. If they win their game in hand, which is, I think, it's in a few weeks' time... Yeah. They'll go 3 points clear. And the next few for them are Leicester away, Everton, Bournemouth, Fulham, Palace, Leeds, before they play Liverpool on the 8th of April. So,
no top six in about 5 or 6.
So, I mean, you know, you guys said that the game at the weekend is absolutely massive at Villa Park. Couldn't agree more. It's how they react, Rob. And just, can you remember? I think I remember, like, we talked about Arsenal winning the title. Yeah. And I said, I think they're going to do it. And I'm not changing. I'm not changing on the back of that, but it was the little detail. I forgot what I was going to say now, but there was my thought was when they have a blip, and this was by the way when they were flying a few weeks ago. Yeah. When they have a blip, how long is that blip going to last?
Yeah.
And that's it. Mm. If they have a blip for 1-2 games, you know, maybe 3 if it's a draw or whatever, they've got to get winning again because they won the first like 13 out of 15 or something crazy. So this is where we're in it right now. We're in it right now, Arsenal. How long is this little blip going to last before you get winning again? Because if you start winning again immediately at Villa Park, then there's no reason, you know, it's kind of in your control. You've got the extra points with that game in hand that they can't go on and do it. But granted, psychologically, that's difficult. They've got to play Man City again this season. But I, you know what, I loved it, Rob. The controversies, the decisions, the referee, you know, the calls and stuff. Which I want to ask your opinion about that. The penalty given. There was lots to admire in the game. I just enjoyed the game because of the tension around the Emirates Stadium, mate.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, it was one of those where I said to Bex, you get up in the morning, you got a little bit of butterflies, and you're not playing, you're a thousand miles away from it, but you know it's big. You know this is going to have a bearing on where the title went on. I don't think it's title defining. I think we're saying that. I think it's an indicator and it tells us that, you know, Arsenal have got work to do. But I also, Rob, from Arsenal's point of view, and again, in no way am I saying, but City still seem to me like there's a team that might drop the odd game here and there. And so if you're Arsenal, you've got to put one of those runs in. And I think Lee said very cleverly on the from the gantry today, he said, if you can have your blip, have it now and then kick back into gear again and finish the season off well. You know, you don't want to have that blip towards the end of the season. So in some respects, if it's this three-game blip that's happened, they've lost two of those three, 1 point from 9, but then they go on a winning run again and, you know, then they face City at the Etihad in April, I think it is, in that game, isn't it? Then that one could be a title decider.
Yeah, I mean, City, they've lost 4 games. You know, they can't afford to lose many more. Mm. You know, with that game in hand that Arsenal have, if City lose the next 2 or 3 games, like which they've shown that they've done before, then it's game on again. Just going back to some of the specifics, Rob, I thought it was interesting, the penalty decision.
Yeah.
So
did you think it
decision,
was a penalty? Did you think it was a penalty? Is the first question because I mean it's
well,
quite
let,
many
let,
people.
Let me say, yeah. Well, I haven't seen many. I've seen more people that didn't think it was a penalty, and that's where I fell. I think the fact that I don't know what it's like up in the commentary position in the games. The fact that Graham and Lee initially, after probably maybe 1 or 2 replays, didn't know where the penalty was, I think is an indicator. I think it was a natural... I thought it was very soft. I think a goalkeeper that comes off his line in an attempt to save the ball, and the shot, you know, is unaffected, he gets his shot off and there's a coming together, you know, I thought it was very soft. I think you see players coming together, Rob, a lot. You know, and I know that the argument of if it's anywhere else on the field, it's a foul. I just think with inside the penalty box, we know that that's not the case. Things change all the time. There's never, you don't get a lot of dinky little fouls you see as penalty on the general field of play. So, I thought it's a little clumsy. I think nobody is batting an eyelid if nothing's given there. Everybody continues to play the game. When he points to the spot, I mean, like, literally, like, where? What was that? Someone on the line? Somebody handball it? So I thought it was very soft. And I think most referees, and I know subjective, I think most referees would not have given that, given what we've seen in previous games and in similar-ish situations. So I was surprised it was given, but I totally understand you, Tim. I think Lee Dixon thought strongly it was after being not sure what it was for before that, and Graham, I don't think, thought it was a penalty as well. So I get a split, and of course I'll get both sides of it, Rob. But for me, I thought it was very, very soft. What's your take?
I heard and was with Tim, and it was interesting with Tim because initially, as it happened, he went no, and then the more he saw it, he went yeah. I can see why it's given. It's a soft one, but I can see why it's given. I'll give you my take on it, mate. And again, everybody can have a take, and it's debatable. And listen, if it hadn't been given, and it did go to VAR, by the way, and VAR said it wasn't clear.
No chance.
Error, so that was you know, that was always going to be the case. But I think if he hadn't given it, he might have said it wasn't a clear and obvious error. So, you know, it was all on the referee's decision. My take was that Eddie Nketiah gets there in the box and gets his shot away. Now, I think for the and I'm talking about the amount of contact that Edison has, I think is too strong for, sometimes you bump in or the amount of contact tells me he's made a poor decision flying out of his goal if the striker's going to get there first. The second point that becomes an important one for me, and I always try and put myself in that situation, Rob, is maybe if I get there, toe the ball, it goes out of play, and then I hit him, I kind of go, well, it's gone out of play. But if I toe the ball to goal, and he's there, and I can maybe get a block or get another shot, something off as the guy's trying to clear the ball off the line, I think it was Ake, one of the defenders, actually is kicking the ball off the line, and that's when I get hit, then that's obstructing. That's stopping me. That's a foul. That's foul play, because I could maybe get a second bite of that as I'm going through. So the speed at which he came, the poor decision, and the inability for me to continue to try and make the most of a chance, because the ball didn't go out of play, the ball stayed in play. For me, I felt it was a penalty kick. I get it's a bit soft. I understand why people don't see it, but I can only talk from putting myself in that position. If I was Eddie Nketiah, I would have absolutely screamed for a penalty.
Just last point on me, Rob, with it, and I get that, and I of course I respect your opinion and stuff on that. Don't you think we see a lot more of, you know, think of a scenario where a player's about to shoot, a defender comes in to try and block it, the shot goes off, and they kind of, there's contact after the shot, maybe goes over the bar, but it's like that wouldn't be given as a penalty. Like, shot comes in, you can't block it, he gets a shot away, you follow into him a little bit. I just think that's part and parcel of challenging for the football. There are natural comings together. But anyway, listen, it didn't affect the game. It didn't matter. It's just an interesting one. Yeah. I think any time that if I hear you or Lee Dixon or Graham, and we have different opinions, then it's worth having a chat, because it just shows how difficult the job is, the referees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just a bit more.
Where does that leave Arsenal, Rob? For the bigger picture for Arsenal in the title race. What do you think? How does it affect them going forward now?
Well, Saturday becomes Tuesday, we've talked about. I think getting the next win, is the most important thing now for Mikel Arteta. I think there will be a little bit of having to lift a few spirits. I think the players knew what this was and what the result means. But a win against Villa and, you know, your game in hand, you can keep the belief. He said before the game he was looking for the belief and bravery of his team. He said after the game he's got more belief. I think with how they played and how they handled certain parts of the game, they made errors in defensive areas and didn't take chances at the top end of pitch. So you put that combination together, you're probably not going to win, certainly against Man City. But they're still in it, Rob. Absolutely still in the race where we are now. Listen, if in a month or 6 weeks' time, this runs kind of a few draws, a couple of losses and that, we might say, you know what, it was too much for them, that wobbles hurt them. But right now, they're still in the race.
Rob, just last comment before we move on to the next game. You know, like City, and amazing, like, in this club, can't it make idiots of everybody? I mean, how long ago is it where we're all saying something wrong at City? Yeah. Something's not right. Not playing to the strengths of Erling Haaland, and he's not doing this and they're not doing that. And why is he doing this? And why is he playing this 3-2-5? And what, you know, all these different systems. I mean, of course, we want to break down every blooming minute that they play in every game. But City are champions and they find ways. And like you said on the broadcast, Rob, this is the time where they usually get it together. But isn't it just an example of, gosh, when City lose or have a couple of bad results, and I'm guilty, I admit it. Like, yeah. You start to think, well, hang on a minute, can they go again? Have they got it in there? I just wonder, Rob, and the last question for you, the allegations against Manchester City with the Premier League now, of course, charging them with all these 100 breaking of the laws and stuff. Is that added a little dimension, a little bit of fire in their belly between now and the end of the season?
Absolutely. Do you remember after the Spurs game, they were 2-0 down with the Spurs, 1-4-2. He came out and he blasted the players. He blasted the fans. Yeah, he blasted the expectancy. Mm. And he almost like he just wanted to get everything going a little bit, didn't he? I think the allegations have done that for him, Rob. And the other thing, just before we finish, I want to say is that, and listen, we'll be talking about Pep long after he's gone and what he's done for English football and all that, and whether he's played the 3-2-5 today and his systems and all those things that we as people who love the tactics of the game, can't wait. But there was a period, Rob, when Sir Alex Ferguson had his Manchester United teams and they started to win the titles and they won 2, 3, 4, 5. And the questions were always asked, how do you keep the hunger with that group? Because we've played against those teams and they just were relentless. And this Manchester City team are relentless in a different way, probably with more football and more skill. But he deserves a lot of credit for this, Rob, in terms of exactly what you said.
Yeah,
you
know, handled it.
He plays with no striker, a false nine. Can't win a title like that. He does it. Inverted fullbacks, a goalkeeper coming out. Then now he gets Haaland in. And they continue. The hunger and the drive and the will and the desire are things that are easy to say. But sometimes, Rob, you get soft. You get soft when you've won things. You get soft when you've got money. You get soft when you get a big contract. There's none of that around the football club. And I think that stoking up was one of those occasions after that Spurs game where he just felt, listen, I've got all my players, they've got all the medals, maybe the Champions League is a big one for them to come, but they've got lots of money now. How do I drive these players on again? And he finds different ways of doing it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
No, well said, mate. Well said. City roll on. What a great result. That's a massive result for them. Blimey, just top quality. Okay, let's move it on. Okay, what's next up? Champions League, of course, has returned. Knockout stages of that. Brilliant, brilliant competition. Again, all these games going on at the same time. We got I got double screens Wednesday and Tuesday. Okay, AC Milan versus Tottenham, Rob. Yeah.
Spurs away at AC Milan, yeah.
That was yesterday. San Siro, 1-0 to Tottenham. Brahim Diaz, the former City player, I think he went to Real Madrid. He's at AC Milan on loan. Scores the goal, kind of a double, kind of dives in to head it over the line. So I had a good look at this, Rob, and I guess this Milan. I know Milan are champions from last year in Serie A, but it's not a very good Milan team. No, it's just not. There's been a little bit of infighting this season. They're having a bit of a struggle. I expected Tottenham to go there and do better, get a better result. Now, of course, for Tottenham's point of view, Højbjerg was suspended, Rob, in midfield. Bentancur's out with an ACL injury, which is a nightmare for him and for the team. Yeah. Start to really show his quality in the middle of the park. Hugo Lloris is out with injury as well. But it was another, for me, Rob, disappointing Tottenham performance. I mean, they had a decent start to the game. The football was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, Milan score with the first attack of the game, and then, of course, Milan from that point are going to sit behind the ball.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, when I look at this Spurs team, and we've talked about it, of course, a ton now under Antonio Conte, that defensively not strong enough.
Yeah.
But the players behind the front three, there is another example of not enough quality, creativity to engage the front three, to ask the right questions, to deliver the balls the way that they want. And 1-0, of course, you know, Conte was disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, says, you know, of course, the second leg back in North London. You'd still fancy them to turn it around,
yeah,
because Milan are not very good. They've got a couple of very good players. Yeah. Rafael Leao plays on the left hand side, is having a good season for them. Giroud, of course, up front, you know, is doing his thing. But other than that, then there's nothing special about them. Good left side of the side. Hernandez as well plays on that left side as a wing back, links up with Leao. So it's good, you know, that's why it's enjoyable to watch these teams that we don't see all the time, because it's, there's some good players there. But I just think Tottenham were disappointing, Rob, and they might find a way in the second leg, but it's still not very good.
I mean, I thought it was, I mean, Milan had a couple of good opportunities, a couple of headed chances that didn't hit the target.
To make it two.
Centre-back to make it two, and then you're under pressure. You're right, I actually saw, I was sort of glimpsing, I wasn't watching the game fully, but I saw good chunks of the game. I thought Skip and Saul in midfield, two young players who were in there, I thought they did a decent job.
Did well.
Saul looks like he could be a player, Rob, if he can get some minutes under him. Got a bit of athleticism, can play the ball, doesn't mind accepting it, good athlete. So I like that. I was listening to a radio show in England today, and they were talking about the result and saying, well, you know, it's a 1-0 for Spurs away from home. They can come at home March the 8th, I think, in the new Tottenham Spurs Stadium. And, you know, if they get the crowd behind them, they take chances. They should have a good chance of getting through. And, you know, it's important for Conte, it's important for Harry Kane. But the questions were being asked, Rob, and it was interesting. Like, somebody mentioned Heung-min's son and said, where are we with Heung-min's son now? Like, we all love him. He scored a brilliant amount of goals season on season, 23 last season. But at this stage, is he warranting a spot in the team? Or are we at the point where it was Charleston or Danjuma or somebody who they bought? Might it mean, or even going with an extra midfield player and playing two up top? I mean, and I thought, do you know what? As I was thinking, I thought, if I'm a Spurs fan, it's a real question right now. Is his form good enough? Are we keeping him in because of what we know he can do or what he is doing? Because right now what he's doing, Rob, and again, he might say he's deeper on the pitch and the way they defend doesn't help him, but we're not seeing the best of Heung-min's son, and that's a problem because he can be a game winner.
Absolutely, Rob. It's the question to ask right now. I've got it in my notes. It was the next thing I was going to bring up. And for me, the answer is we need to see more of Richarlison. Richarlison came into the game.
Yeah.
I think Richarlison should be playing on the left-hand side instead of Heung-min Son at the moment. Love Heung-min Son, what he's done. He's having a difficult season for whatever reason. And that's why you buy extra excellent players. And that's why you buy Richarlison. You bring him to the football club is to give that option to keep the front players honest. And right now, Richarlison, in my opinion, should be playing instead of Heung-min Son. Again, and I'm sure there's any little fitness details that we don't know about, but assuming that everybody's fit, Richarlison should play. He's the sort of player, Rob, that can make things happen, Richarlison. Now, I know he can get under the skin of certain people and he can be emotional, but he's the sort of person, we saw it for Everton.
Yeah.
Talk about step up in difficult circumstances and produced goals and wins and performances. And when Spurs aren't going full, you know, firing on all cylinders in terms of the attacking play, he is somebody that can change it and change the feeling and change the dynamic. I think he should be starting right from the next game. It'll keep Heung-min Son hungry, keep him honest, make him realise that he's not an automatic starter. Kulusevski didn't have a brilliant game as well, but I think we've seen he's a little different to Kane, Son and Richarlison. They're almost like a separate little section. Kulusevski's kind of different for me. So I would always have Kulusevski in the side because I really like him from the right-hand side. But Richarlison, in my opinion, should be playing right now. Heung-min Son needs a little bit of time on the bench.
Yeah, I think that was the view of some of the Spurs fans who were phoning in. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. But yeah, certainly Spurs got a bit of work to do, but, you know, I do have a chance in the second leg. And they score early, then, you know, the place comes alive and they've got a chance making it through. to the Champions League quarterfinal.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's take it to a team that is a bit of spotlight on, Rob, and Borussia Dortmund-Chelsea. Dortmund 1-0 up on this one. I know you saw more of the game. Obviously, I was in studio. Just want to get your thought, Rob, just before you tell us a little bit about the game. I know if you saw yesterday, so Graham Potter was asked before in his press conference at times, you know, does he have to be a bit nasty as a Big Six manager? And he went at some length to talk about his career and where he'd started in the ninth level of English football in the Northern whatever league he started, and he's got his way through, you know, via Ostergaard away and Brighton and Swansea, and he's now in the knockout stage of Champions League. But he also sort of, for me, showed another side, Rob, where he said, you obviously don't know what you're talking
angry.
About. Yeah, and I kind of liked it, Rob. Yeah. I liked it. Like, don't disrespect this guy just because he doesn't come on, you know, doing the Mourinho antics or the, you know, certain way of thing. He's Graham Potter, and he does it in a different way, and we have to respect that he's doing it in a different way. And I liked it. I liked that he came out and almost batted the guy back with an answer that the question deserved.
Yeah, I saw it as well, Rob. I saw it, and couldn't agree more with him. Mm. Everybody's different, and we can all show you champions and legendary managers of all from the whole scale. From craziness on the sideline to Mr. Cool Calm and sit on the bench and not really get involved on the sideline. There's a bit of a thing right now, Rob, in the league, isn't it? Where, you know, fans maybe enjoy seeing their manager jumping around the side. Mikel Arteta plays up to it, in my opinion. I don't think it's natural for him to do that. Yeah, Conte does it. There's a lot of different managers right now, and in previous seasons recently, it's kind of the thing to do. And I have absolutely no problem with Graham Potter doing it the way he's done it. He's been successful at all his other clubs doing it the way. Why should he act out and do something different on the sideline? So I'd be like him. I'd get angry at that. Like, just, you know, talk about the scrutiny. And this is what comes with managing a club the size of Chelsea, that when things aren't great, any little detail that people can find to ask questions and pick holes, they will do it. And maybe that's what comes with the territory. But I liked his answer. I liked his kind of, he got a bit peed off with it and had a bit of a snap. Have a little bit of a snap. Don't mind a bit of a snap. I'm with you, Rob. Have a bit of a snap up. It's okay. But in terms of his antics on the sideline, no problem with it. No problem with it. You know, however you want to do it, just be yourself, be natural. Absolutely. And, you know, and his team, there's flashes, Rob. There's flashes of this Chelsea team coming together.
How did he go? With the back four or back three? Did he go back four today?
He went back four, an important, really. Ben Chilwell came into the game. Started the game at left back. Rob, Reece James looked $1 million at right back, as he often does. Yeah. I feel he's getting fitter and stronger, more powerful. Loftus-Cheek and Enzo Fernandez in the middle, Rob. It's a 4-2-3-1. Hakim Ziyech on the right-hand side. And Mudryk still to convince a little bit. That's okay. You know, he's going to need a little bit of time. Kai Havertz up front. And the star of the show, João Félix, player, Rob, talented, creative, should have scored, you know, maybe, you know, he's got to improve on that, because his quality, and he is an absolute pest for defenders. Yeah. And I like him in the number 10 position. I think he hit the bar in the game, Rob. He had a cipher opportunity, put over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, Chelsea weren't great, and Dortmund, going to Dortmund in that stadium, in the Champions League knockout stage, is not an easy assignment. And of course, 1-0 down, you know, it's not the best result to take to Stamford Bridge, but they're still in this tie. I got to say, the goal from the young kid, Karim Adeyemi, 21-year-old young German winger, Rob, yeah. was an unbelievable goal. And then we got a chance to see the highlight. I mean, of course, this was going on at the same time as the Arsenal City game. So again, two screens going on. So I can't give you every detail of every moment. But this goal, my goodness. I mean, he took the ball as a counter-attack. Chelsea almost scored from a set piece. And then it goes to Adeyemi about... well, in his own half, and he dribbles it, and he's got a one-on-one situation with the last defending player for Chelsea, the World Cup champion Enzo Fernandez, and he roasts him, goes by him as if he's not even there. It's not great from Enzo, by the way. Not great. Like, he drifts by him, goes around the goalkeeper, rolls it over the line. It's a wonderful, wonderful individual goal, which anybody who loves the game is going to enjoy that. Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant goal. Chelsea caught out, Enzo caught out. But again... there was moments where it's coming together. When you've got Bencho on Robin, you've got Reece James, you know, adding their quality from left back. You know, you've got João Félix knitting it together. It's not ideal. Yeah, of course it's not. They lost the game. But I'm just saying that there was a couple of little moments where, you know, they showed what potentially they're trying to get to. Again, it was the same system I think they played in the last game, Rob, a few changes. I think it's the right thing for Potter not to complicate things at the moment with crazy different systems and changing things, which is what he did a lot, to be fair, at the start of his reign here. But João Félix, I mean, he's one of them that I'd pay money. I'd pay the entrance fee just to see him play. Cough, really, really talented and skillful and adds to this Chelsea team. So,
I've had two good looks at him.
Yeah.
I saw him at Fulham in the first game when he got sent off for 70 minutes. He was the best player on the park by distance. Saw him against West Ham at the weekend, Rob. I tell you what, he's one of those. He's almost like the Paul Scholes type. His head's on the turn all the time. He's dropping into spaces. He's moving. So clever with his movement. I totally agree. I think once the system's set up and they've got things right and the protection around him, he's going to be a good player. Just on that one, Ronto, two questions I've got.
Yeah.
One on Potter, really, just in terms of 1-0 away from home from Dortmund, certainly not a poor result, and they can, you know, put that right at Stamford Bridge in the second leg. But you're saying that things start to come, and sometimes we're looking at different things like build-up play, system of play, bit of rotation, start to see some things that you think, that's you know, that's coming, that's better, relationships are starting to work. There's some in the press, Rob, who it's all about results, you know, they've lost, Does he have to be a little bit careful that he gets enough results to just keep that at bay enough so that whether it's league position, I think they're 10th in the league at the moment, or Champions League, that there's still an optic that, you know, it's going in the right direction, Rob, even if we're not winning enough, as many games as we'd like? Because if that turns on him and if one or two of the press start picking up, like, he's just getting a bit fiery, it could get a little bit nasty between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, it could, Rob, and I think you're right, and we've seen it before. Mm. We have the benefit of seeing other great managers that have come into their clubs. Yeah. Pep at the start. Of course, the biggest example is Jurgen Klopp. We saw it with Mikel Arteta at Arsenal, Rob. Yeah. When you're starting a new project and you're young players trying to mould a team, like all of those managers did, by the way, at their clubs, there's rocky moments. Mm. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again now, what's important for Graham Potter is that, and you hinted at it, Rob, that there's a sign of, between now and the end of the season, you said it, going in the right direction. I'd say development, improvement, progress. Yeah. Progress. Now, if it's progressing and they finish outside the top four, so difficult for them to finish in the top four now, which would be unthinkable, really, with Chelsea with the money they've spent. But with what's going on and with the changes, and they've still got half a dozen players injured or whatever, but I just want to see, for me, I'd want to see some progression and some flashes. Okay, this looks better. Enzo Fernandez, Ruben Loftus-Cheek or whatever it is, two great fullbacks. Yeah. Félix doing his thing. Havertz starting score a few more goals. Mihailo Mudryk, Rob, still continues for me to be the most important player that needs to work. He needs to work, because every great team, I feel like, has a has an outstanding forward. An outstanding forward. And they need one. Because João Félix on loan right now. Now, he maybe, if they sign him, maybe he can be that outstanding player, that the Bergkamp player, or, you know, whoever it might be. But Mudryk is the one that there's thought very highly of. He needs to work. And at the moment, we're only seeing just a few flashes of what he can do. So as long as there's progression, Rob, in my opinion, and I see that it's starting to come together, and I see that it's starting to be some chemistry and some progress and better results, then absolutely no problem with them continuing this project. If they continue to win one, lose one, draw one, and stay around mid-table at the end of the season, he's going to have a problem. So that's as simple as that for me. They've got to climb that table now and show like they're improving, that he is able and capable to mould a team out of these potentially great young players. But there's got to be improvement, mate, and it's got to start immediately, hasn't it?
Just one more question on this one. Jude Watch, most coveted young man in European football. How did Mr. Bellingham look today?
Yeah, it looked very good. Again, it was hard to get a full assessment, Rob, given the City game was hard to take your eyes off of it. I'll tell you what's interesting. I'll just give you this one. I mean, everybody has incredible opinion of Jude Bellingham right now and where he might go and stuff. I listened to Didi Hamann, former Liverpool player. He did an interview. I think he was in Germany. He works for Sky,
isn't
he, in Germany?
They
had him on Sky Sports News in the UK. Mm. And he said something, because he really does say it how he sees it, Didi Hamann. And he said, I know there's a lot of hype about him, but basically, as a young player now at Dortmund, he does what he wants. He does what he wants in midfield. So he looks brilliant going forward. He don't track back. He's not a worker. He's not, you know, he's enjoying the position that he's got himself into, being a really key player and a powerful player. I hope he doesn't let his kind of I don't know, his standing right now in the game sort of stop him getting away from his what would be a complete midfield player. Still be a complete midfield player again. That's the only place I've heard it, Rob. So I'm not going big on this. When we watch him, and I'd love to watch him next time they play in a few weeks' time, the second leg, just to sort of see what he does off the ball. And is he a little, dare I say, lazy, out of possession? Didn't see that for England.
No.
You know, we haven't seen it.
No.
But Didi Hamann, a midfield player, a big voice of German football for Sky Germany over there, just said, be a bit careful. Yeah. He's turning into a bit of a luxury player for Dortmund. So something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well made.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. Because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's move on, mate. Just a couple of more... big games in the Champions League. Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, two heavyweights who both feel they can go on maybe and win this tournament. I mean, the big question with Paris Saint-Germain is, you know, with Neymar, with Messi, with Mbappe in your team, you know what you can get on any given day, but you also know what you're not going to get on any given day. Bayern got the goal, give themselves a lead, take it back to Germany on March the 8th. From PSG's point of view, when Mbappe came on, second half, he had a bit of an injury, had a couple of goals disallowed offside, and were clearly not goals, but obviously the threat with him was obvious. Messi had a couple of looks, he'd come back from injury. Neymar was a little bit quieter during the game. Bayern 1-0 up. Apparently, I read somewhere like unbeaten at home for the last 12 months or something. You'd have to fancy them again to get it done away from home, Rob. Enough structure and discipline in the side and threat going forward. PSG, what, relying on an Mbappe or Messi magic moment?
Yeah, they are. I was actually quite shocked first half, Rob, how poor PSG were. I mean, Bayern Munich for the away team absolutely dominated. Yeah. Dominated possession, dominated territory. I mean, Mbappe's been coming back from a thigh injury, I think it is, a muscle injury, so he's on the bench. The two up front was Neymar and Messi with like a little diamond behind them. But they were so passive, so defensive, forced back so much by Bayern's pretty simple system formation that they play. They got plenty of talent. Choupo-Moting continues to look a threat up front. Yeah. Rob, former Premier League player, of course, that didn't really shine in the Premier League.
You go from Stoke City to Bayern. I mean, we've all got a chance.
He looks a threat.
Yeah,
absolutely. He looked a threat. The goal was a really nice goal. Mm. One wing back to the other wing back. Kingsley Coman scoring the goal in the 50th. Yeah, Davis, Alphonso Davis to Coman on the right hand side, comes in, finishes it nicely, 53rd minute. And then, of course, things changed. Kylian Mbappe, Rob, came into the game. Yeah. He comes off the bench just before the hour mark. I think he scores, but it's offside. They're a different team with him. I mean, like the running in behind, the pace that he offers.
Pace was phenomenal.
They were a different team.
It looks, Rob, like when he knocks the ball and he runs, it looks like somebody's speeding the tape up a little bit. I mean, his explosive pace
Absolutely.
Is
his feet, his legs. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the only chance I give him. Mm. That's the only chance I give him in the second leg, because other than that, I just can't see it. You can't see it. Yeah. Bayern Munich are good. And well-organised and really dominated. Julian Nagelsmann, of course, is the coach now, a smart coach, disappointed last year. Yeah. But they looked a much better team until Mbappe comes on, and then there's a few flurries. They're flying at Bayern in the last 5 or 10 minutes to try and get something back out of the game. But Bayern, good value, 1-0. And again, is this another season where PSG, for all the money they've spent and the talent they've got, can't find a way to bring it all together. But we'll see. Mbappe's a special player, and maybe he can do special things at Bayern Munich in a few weeks' time. But Bayern, for me, big favourites to go through.
Yeah, good shout. And there was one more game, Club Brugge 0 Benfica 2, which obviously gives Benfica a great chance of getting through. Club Brugge is where another former teammate of yours, and we saw him in England, Scotty Parker's gone to Club Brugge, hasn't he? He talked that night when we saw him, I think, at the Emirates, didn't we? He talked about getting back into management soon. We weren't sure that was happening a week or two later. I don't believe things have gone that great for him. And obviously a 2-0 defeat to Benfica, not what you want in the first leg at home.
No, that's right. I mean, we did speak to him real quick. And he's had a bit of a nightmare, Rob. I think he's lost like nearly all the games. I think maybe all the games but one, I think he might have lost since going to Club Brugge. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But, I mean, Benfica, some club, isn't it, Benfica? Yeah. There's some club.
They
do well in European
there,
competition. It's incredible. They got an academy to die for, with the players that's come through there, Plymouth going for big fees. So, well done, Benfica. Second leg at home on March the 7th. Great chance of going through. Yeah, absolutely they do.
So a big story,
Rob,
Big story that was doing the rounds. So Jesse Marsh got sacked 10 days ago at Leeds, and then he was installed as favourite for the Southampton job. Apparently went down to St Mary's today, had talks with the ownership group, and everybody thought it was a matter of just dotting the I's, crossing the T's. And then news came out that these... been a breakdown in communication between the two, that Marsh has left, and it doesn't look like he's going to be at all involved with the football club. What's your take on this? We had our Premier League insider, David Ornstein, on today. He said to us today that it's down to two things, Rob: length of contract and amount of money that he was either going to be paid or would earn over that period. And both of those were not what he wanted, so he decided to walk away from the opportunity. Is this a good call for Jesse, do you think? I mean, we don't know the detail, and obviously length of contract would suggest that they've almost gone maybe a 6 month till the end of the season, and then let's take a look at it there. Maybe Jesse wanted a little bit more, maybe an 18-month or something, to know that if they did go down, and listen, they're off, you know, some might suggest they're on the way there now, that he gets a chance 1 year to bring them back up. But I'm disappointed for him, Rob, that he's not getting the chance to prove he's better than what many people feel he's done in the league.
Yeah, and let's face it, if the reports are true, Rob, he still had that chance to do that. Mm. But I get it. Why does he want to give everything for 6 months? They get relegated and they bin him off and get rid of him at that point anyway. Surely if they like him enough to take over in this really difficult situation, they'd like him potentially to bring them back up again and start again and build another team. He's built, you know, he made a lot of changes at Leeds United. Yeah. The team was very much, with the signings that they made, players that he knew, was looking good in many, many departments. I said it, I'll say it again. I thought he was unlucky to lose his job at Leeds United. I think they should have continued with him. Now they're having a nightmare trying to find a replacement. Yeah. It's just, if it was not an 18-month contract, I kind of get it from Jesse March, because it's really difficult to stay up. And then your reputation takes another hit, of course. But also, Rob, from his point of view, He's not going to get, and this, I just go back to, if it was just a 6 month contract, yeah. And that's a big decision, because I don't know whether he gets another Premier League job anytime soon. I kind of agree with him that you've got to give me 18 months. If we go down, then give me a chance to go again. With the ownership there and the young players, it kind of made sense. I think tactically it would have been difficult for him to maybe adjust his style to, we got to grind a little bit. We're bottom of the league table. Whether he would have done that, I don't know. There's the RB, the Red Bull connection, of course, with managers, Hasenhüttl and the past there, the club like that style. But if, let me throw a question to you, Rob. Yeah. If you're in a situation, right, and you're realistic, Rob, and you're thinking, I'm not going to get another Premier League job. I'm still going to take it, and I'm going to take my chances. Yeah. And if I keep this team up, then gangbusters, new contract, and I've rejuvenated myself. Mm. Or, well, I want 18 months, and I'm going to kiss goodbye my chance of ever being a Premier League manager again. Rob, what would you do? Well, is that the scenario?
It's interesting, and I maybe come at it different with a different set of eyes. Based on where we are now, I don't think Jesse Marsh gets another Premier League job anyway.
Right.
I don't think he gets another Premier.
So this is it.
So I would take it. I would back myself and my coaching, and I would take it. Because I think if I go down, then I wasn't going to get another Premier League job. If I change some things and people even see some things, they might go, you know what, I like that word Jesse Marsh did in those last 16 games. I just feel, Rob, there's ever only 20 seats in the Premier League. Probably 10 to 14 of them you're never going to get. So these five or six that you've got a chance of, somebody's offered you one of those seats, I'm going to sit my backside down in it and do my best I can. With a young group of players you talked about, it's quite a nice fit. Jesse Marsh and Southampton actually feels a nice fit.
Kind of. Less pressure.
Less pressure under the radar. Can go and work and work with a new group and young players. And I don't know. I just hope he hasn't missed the opportunity of showing in 16 games. Because he can coach, Rob. He can coach. Mm. He's a good coach.
The only other thing, Rob, is if he's got a sense that, because our understanding is that his family are there and they love it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the kids are in school apparently, and they're really enjoying it. And I think they want to stay in England. Whether there's a championship job possibly, Rob, in the summer that might appeal to him, that gives him a chance to get back in. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. Vincent Kompany's gone and took a job at Burnley. Burnley got relegated. Yeah. Vincent Kompany took that job. He's turned the club around. They play in a different style. Looks like they're going to get promoted again. Vincent Kompany is going to be a Premier League manager. So it is possible. And sometimes you have to take a step down to get that chance to bring him back up again. So I just really hope we see Jesse Marsh again in English football with a chance to prove himself again. And he's got to do that now after losing the job at Leeds United. But again, I just think it was too soon at Leeds United. But I think I agree with you, Rob, on your shout with that. 6 months, okay, let's go. Let's have a go, because he might regret it if he doesn't get another sniff and he ends up leaving the country and comes back to the US or wherever. Maybe the national team is the next thing for him. I don't know. But, yeah, I thought we were going to see him at Southampton, and I kind of didn't mind it. Difficult job, but the way he is, the enthusiasm he brings, I thought it was a pretty good fit as well. So, yeah, it's a big story, and I'm disappointed the way it's ended.
Yeah, we'll wait till see at the end of the season if any jobs or any seats come up in the Premier League or the Championship. Yeah. Listen, mate, we're going to wrap this up on a day when the reigning champions just had a little bit too much for Arsenal in the biggest game of the season at the Emirates. We're going to be back on Sunday, that's February the 19th. We will recap match week 23 of the Premier League, and the big game there on the Saturday, Newcastle versus Liverpool, always a game with Lots of incident, usually lots of goals. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
Love a classic chocolate chip cookie. Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.